What's up, everybody? Welcome to the TNT Wellness and Nutrition Podcast. I'm Thomas.
I'm Tyson.
I studied exercise physiology and competed in many various sports ranging from wrestling to ultra running. I use that knowledge to combine today's science with ancient wisdom to live an optimal lifestyle and to spread that information onto the masses.
I'm a lifelong weightlifter and I'm obsessed with health and wellness. My degree in biology, with an emphasis in neurobiology, physiology, and behavior, allows me to take a deep dive into the most current literature and bring that information to you.
Thank you for listening to the podcast. If you'd like to show your support, please rate and review on your favorite podcast provider, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or SoundCloud. Also, sign up on our website, tntwellnessandnutrition.com, for all of our up-to-date content.
Let's get this started.
What's up, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of TNT Wellness and Nutrition Podcast. This is episode 112. This is part 4 of our statin scam series. So today we're finally going to be discussing the actual side effects of taking statins. And this is going to be a lot of hard science, literally showing what statins do to a person with diabetes or giving diabetes, all that type of stuff. So we're going to break down that. But the article of the week this week is a discussion of the Joe Rogan podcast. Paul Saladino, which is a very popular carnivore-based doctor out there, he was on the Joe Rogan podcast, and he just discussed his ideas on the carnivore diet and all that stuff. So we're going to discuss that real quick. So Tom, you want to do a little breakdown of that?
Yeah, so Paul Saladino, he's one of the best advocates for the carnivore diet. He's one of my favorites. He's very knowledgeable. He's very passionate. You can just tell. And I mean, he even like puts his money where his mouth is. Like, he's following this diet to a T. He shares all of his numbers and stuff like that. So he's a great advocate for that. He's the author of the Carnivore Code. And that's pretty much what he was doing, like, on the podcast, on Joe Rogan's podcast, was kind of promoting his book. And they were just like looking at the carnivore diet through an ancestral standpoint, an ethical way of looking at it, like nutrition and just kind of everything. And I've heard him speak on different podcasts. I follow his podcast too, but I really liked it that they didn't just focus on just like the facts, like some of the spiritual stuff that they were talking about. Paul Saladino and Joe Rogan, they're both hunters, and they're just talking about how like spiritual like hunting is, and just like just being tied in with your food. And one thing that a lot of people that are like vegans will argue is that how being a vegan is more ethical because you're not responsible for killing any animals. But I mean, those people are extremely like detached from the food supply, because it's like, no, lots of animals die like through pesticides, through stealing land and stuff like that. So it's a really good podcast. It's a bit long. It's over 3 hours. I broke it up into 3 different phases. I can't listen to a 3-hour podcast all at once, but it was just kind of great listening to it. And one thing that Paul Saladino shared was his LDL numbers, just kind of to tie that in with the current series that we're doing. So he has a CAC score, coronary artery calcification score, of 0, which basically means like in the next 5 years, you have the very, very lowest risk possible of having a heart attack. So no signs of heart disease. But his LDL numbers, I don't remember the specific number, but it was like the highest number I've ever heard. It was either like the 500s, or I think, honestly, I think it was in the high 600s. I think it was like 650.
Damn, really?
Like, I did not know LDL could like really go that high.
Yeah,
which that's is really high. 3 times higher than... No, I think that's like 4 times higher than what would be required for like most cardiologists to put you on a statin drug.
Uh-huh.
But if you look at every single one of his other biomarkers, like straight A's, like perfect. The CAC scans of 0, HDL, the triglyceride ratio, was great. Everything else is just like perfect, but like his LDL is extremely high. And it was just kind of just funny, like listening to that, I was like, wow. And another person, Ben Greenfield, he just went to a heart clinic in, I think it was somewhere in LA, and they put him through a bunch of heart tests, and he just like aced everything, just like Saladino. And then when they look at his LDL was like in the high 200s, and they were trying to tell him, oh yeah, you should go on a statin drug. every other measurement we took is like the best measurement that we've ever seen out of everybody, but your LDL is high, so we should put you on a prescription drug. And I was just thinking, like, okay, these two men are like two of the healthiest people out there. They both look physically great. Like, all these other biomarkers are fantastic, but there's one measurement that there's a problem with. It's probably there's something wrong with that measurement and not with them.
Yeah, exactly. That's both these people are like the epitome of health. Like, everyone in America would pretty much kill to look like them, you know?
Yeah, I mean, they both look good. They're both physically, like, going out there and doing a lot of, like, great things. Ben Greenfield was, like, a triathlete. He was an obstacle course racer. And, like, not just, like, a racer, like, competing and winning and a lot of that stuff. Saladino is a hiker. He's a hunter, stuff like that. I mean, both these guys are, like, very physically fit individuals. It's just kind of just funny, just, like, wow. They get one bad score, and everything else is a straight A, and you're just going to say, like, they're in bad health. It doesn't make any sense.
No, it doesn't make any sense. Yeah, the fascination with LDL and the literal obsession with LDL by just traditional medicine is so flawed. And honestly, it really revolves around statins, and it revolves around these bad studies that we talked about on part 3. So you can go back and listen to that if you want. That these doctors, they just don't. I don't know what it is. I've said this before. I don't know if they have the time. I don't know if they have the interest, or it's just gross incompetence. I don't know what it is, but they just can't seem to actually read this shit and understand it. They just take the headline. They just take what they've been spoon-fed this information, and they run with it. And it's sad.
So I think part of what it is like, if you're when you're in school, it doesn't. There's no benefit of being contrarian or just being like an open-minded thinker. Like, the best students in school are the ones that just memorize, and whatever you tell them, they just memorize that, buy it 100%, and they just kind of parrot it back to you. Like, that's what benefits you. That's what makes you a good student. If you're a good student, then you become a doctor. And then when you get to that point, like, if you're a primary care physician, you're seeing, what, a patient every 15 minutes? You don't have time to read these studies.
Mm-hmm.
So you just have time to just memorize one little quick
talking point, one little
speech that you repeat thousands of times over and over and over again, and then, you know, some drug, some pharmaceutical rep comes in, they're going to tell you that 36% chance of, you know, lowering heart disease. You go like, oh, 36%, I got to do it. So, like, that's just what you're going to believe. You're not going to have the time to look. It's like, wait, is that absolute risk or is that relative risk? What's the difference here? You're not going to have the time to go back to your statistical argument. Like, you know, these people aren't experts on everything.
No.
So I think a lot of it is just like they don't have the time to like even focus on this stuff. And unfortunately, the people that are doctors, unfortunately, they're not outside thinkers. They don't think outside the box. They think inside the box, and that's why they got to where they are.
Yeah, I think, yeah, that's so true. That being, like you said, being a contrarian, trying to push back in a formal education standpoint does not benefit you at all. And I know, I remember having conversations with you that you had that problem with a few of your classes where you saw something, you're like, oh, this is not right. But if you bring it up to the teacher, you're just a bad student. It's not that you're a critical thinker, you're a bad student.
So this is what like really got me interested in health and nutrition a lot more and more. So we were going through just like it was an advanced level nutrition class talking about calcium and how important calcium is for bone health and stuff like that. So the teacher's like, okay, you need to eat dairy, you need to eat milk, you need to eat cheese, stuff like that. So this is a 5-year-old question. There's a lot of people that are lactose intolerant. What do you do if you're lactose intolerant? Well, then you take a supplement. So, okay, makes sense. So I had a follow-up to that. What did people do before supplements? This is like one of the, I think he's either the head of the department or like close to it. He was, you know, not just like a normal teacher, but somebody a little bit higher than that. Didn't have an answer for me.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's a question that a 5-year-old could have asked. Like, that's not a top-level question. Like, I don't think it takes that much understanding to really, to know that answer. And no answer there. I was like, oh, okay. So I was like, teachers don't really have all the answers. School books, textbooks, they don't have all the answers. So you got to kind of do your own research and stuff like that. I mean, that's just one example out of many.
Yeah. And that's just because your question was like one step out of his like already predetermined speech he was going to make on calcium.
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't in the textbook in front of him that he's probably read
ten times
uh-huh. and had that memorized.
Yep, exactly. That's all it is. And I think, yeah, there is going through college and traditional school, I always did really well because I was a quote-unquote good student. I could read a book once, take a test, and remember the parts I had to remember. And I think that's, you know, that's a blessing. You know, I get it. But it doesn't make you smart. It's just completely different. Like, I think nowadays, a little older, a little wiser, I'd rather be a critical thinker any day. Like, don't just regurgitate shit that's been told to you. Like, I try and figure out why. Like, try and figure out really what's going on there. Because a lot of the times, if you ask those secondary questions, those follow-up questions, you'll realize this foundation that you built a lot of your conclusions on is built of sand. And a lot of it's just BS.
Yeah, and unfortunately, a lot of people get upset when, like, when the authority figure is questioned. They're like, I'm the authority, you're supposed to just believe me without, like, questioning me. And it's like, well, if you don't have all the answers, then, like, maybe you should be questioning this stuff, too, and, like, find mm-hmm. out a little bit more, learn yep. some more.
Exactly. I know. Crazy. So, yeah, and this week, like I said, talking about wanting to know the answers, this week really breaks down specifically statins and diabetes and the nitty-gritty of how it really does cause diabetes. So, just like, in short, do statins cause diabetes? Yes, they do. 100%. And this whole podcast is going to break down why. And that's because statins cause hyperinsulinemia, even in the absence of hyperglycemia. And those are kind of big words, so let me just break that down. So pretty much they can cause your insulin levels to be elevated without having your blood sugar markers be elevated. And insulin is just a hormone needed to kind of shift nutrients out of our blood into our cells. And well, insulin does a ton of things, actually, but that's the primary reason we're going to talk about it here. And we've talked about this in the past, that hyperinsulinemia or just high insulin all the time is the true driver of diabetes. High blood sugar is just a symptom. It's not the root cause. And it's been known for nearly 20 years that statins can modulate insulin secretion and sensitivity. So they can pretty much make your insulin be higher and you become less sensitive to it, which is all bad. If you remember in last week's podcast, we talked about how the pharmaceutical industry kind of manipulates data to make things appear better than they are. One of the trials we talked about was a Jupiter trial, and that was with Crestor. Crestor's a really big statin out there. But in the Jupiter trial, it revealed that subjects who took 20 milligrams of Crestor daily over the two-year trial developed a significantly higher incidence of type 2 diabetes. And listen to this, women who took Crestor demonstrated a 50% increase in diabetes. 50%, so that's crazy huge. And a post hoc analysis of the Jupiter trial, that's pretty much means they go back and look at the data after it's done to see what's going on, concluded that the positive cardiovascular benefits of statin treatments outweighed the risk of developing diabetes. But we talked about it last week, how the Jupiter trial was super shady. The Jupiter trial resulted in increased fatal heart attacks in the treatment group, but it was obscured by combining fatal and non-fatal heart attacks. So even though women got diabetes 50% more when they took Crestor, they said, no, it's fine because of benefits of heart disease, even though the people who took a statin died more from heart attacks. It's like a double negative, and they turn it into a positive somehow. It's like just wizardry of the stupidest order, you know?
Yeah, and honestly, like, what they should be looking at when you're looking at fatal diseases is all-cause mortality. Like, are you dying sooner? That's what they really should be measuring, not if you have a heart attack or not. Because if you die from one heart attack, you can't have multiple heart attacks.
Yeah, I know. That's a point you bring up all the time. I think it's so funny, but no one ever thinks of it that way. If you die, that's it. Good luck having anything else happen to you. So another trial that was showed the incidence of diabetes and statins is a PROSPER trial. And this was a 3.2-year randomized trial involving 5,800 elderly men and women testing provastatin, which is also called Provacol, at 40 milligrams daily. And new onset diabetes was significantly increased by 30% in the people who took a statin. So in the study before, it was 50% in women. In this study, it was 30% in men and women. Crazy. and a recent meta-analysis of clinical trials support the notion that statin therapy significantly increases the risk of new onset diabetes by roughly 10%. And if you remember, we talked about it last week, how they manipulate the data, but like Lipitor's magical 36% reduction in heart attacks is really just a 1% reduction from 3% to 2% absolute risk reduction. But in this one, we're talking 10% increase in diabetes, 30% increase in diabetes, and 50% increase in diabetes. So we're comparing 1% heart health to all these huge numbers, upwards of 50% in diabetes. Not worth it, in my opinion, you know?
No, not at all. I mean, you're trying to treat one fatal disease by giving people another fatal disease.
At a much higher rate.
That doesn't really seem like a cure.
Yeah, it's not a cure at all. And statins induce diabetes. It appears to be class effect and directly related to the intensity of the therapy and degree of attained LDL cholesterol lowering. So basically, the higher the dose and the longer you use it, the more chance you have of developing diabetes. So Zocor, Lipitor, and Crestor significantly increase serum fasting insulin levels. The increase in fasting insulin is dose related. So the more you take, the more insulin is going to be released. Not a good thing. And notably, they also significantly decrease insulin sensitivity as determined by HOMA-IR, which is Homeostasis Model of Assessment of Insulin Resistance. And we've talked about HOMA-IR in the past. And that's because it's a great marker for diabetes. We've done a whole podcast on diabetes, so you can go back and listen to Keto for Diabetes Part 1 and Part 2 if you're interested in learning more about really what's going on with diabetes and why HOMA-IR is a good marker. But somebody I like to bring up when it comes to this is Ivor Cummins. So his book, Eat Rich, Live Long, has a great breakdown of the importance of HOMA-IR and how well it can detect your odds of developing diabetes, but also developing a heart attack. So HOMA-IR is a real good marker for insulin sensitivity. And that's what statins do. They increase your insulin and decrease your insulin sensitivity. So it's a double whammy, both bad. But it occurs in the absence of significant changes in your fasting glucose or A1C. And that's really the point I want to get across. Blood sugar doesn't need to be elevated for the damage to occur. And this is a quote. Quote, insulin resistance and hyperinsulinemia might occur for years before the onset of hyperglycemia. Importantly, insulin secretion can be increased by 5 to 10-fold in obese insulin-resistant subjects, even though beta cell mass is increased by only 50%. And the beta cells produce insulin. Therefore, years of hyperinsulinemia might occur prior to the diagnosis of diabetes. End quote. So basically, people won't get diagnosed with diabetes because their blood sugar won't rise dramatically after taking a statin. But that's just because the marker we use to diagnose diabetes is super flawed. It's an endpoint measurement, so why start there? By the time your blood sugar is elevated, you've been diabetic for years. So why not use a measure like HOMA-IR to detect diabetes? If they did that, they would see just how quickly statin therapy can raise insulin and induce diabetes.
Yeah, that's like measuring like if your house is on fire, but there's a pile of ashes after the fire has already burned out. Like you ignore the smoke, you ignore the flames, you just wait for the pile of ashes to be there. And it's like, oh, hey,
there's a fire.
There was a fire there.
It's like, you're a little late, bro. Yeah. That's such a great point. It's just sad. And I really break it down, like I said, in the Keto for Diabetes podcast, like just why the whole medical industry uses blood sugar as a marker. It's super corrupt and it's just super flawed and it's not helping anyone. Trust me.
Yeah. And just to kind of go back to what you're talking about, how statins raise your fasting insulin. When you're fasting, your insulin should lower. Like, that's not supposed to happen. Fasting is one of the best ways to lower your insulin. So if there's a drug out there making your body do the opposite of what's natural, that's not a good thing.
Yeah, not a good thing.
Just not sure how many people kind of realize, like, what's naturally supposed to happen and what these drugs make happen.
Yep. And that's why, this is a quick side note, but if you are deciding to go on a ketogenic diet, a lot of people will start to induce or kind of incorporate some sort of intermittent fasting or even long-term fasting into their diet, because that's real common on a keto diet. If you are taking a statin, that's going to make this diet extremely more difficult. you're going to be way hungrier on your fasting days or in your fasting window. One, because statins block your body's ability to produce ketones. But two, because you are going to have higher fasting insulin. Therefore, your body's not going to have as easy as a time to tap into its own body fat for fuel. So it's a double whammy. Statins suck for everything, and they really suck if you're trying to start a ketogenic diet. This is going to go into the nitty-gritty of why statins cause diabetes. And this is something that if you listen to this podcast before and you kind of just trust my opinion on things, then you can just stop here. You know, statins cause diabetes, done. But someone like me, I hear people on podcasts say these kind of bullet points all the time. And I get it. You know, if you're a respected person in the field, you say that stuff, you can kind of, you know, take their word at face value and just kind of go with it. But I wanted to really go down, what are the mechanisms? Like, why, how do statins cause diabetes? And this is it. It gets kind of complicated, but this is what's really going on inside all of our cells. So diabetes is characterized by a combination of beta cell dysfunction and insulin resistance of skeletal muscle, fat tissue, and liver tissue. And skeletal muscle is a major site of glucose uptake. So approximately 80% in the postprandial state, which just means after you eat, and insulin resistance of skeletal muscle is arguably the primary defect in a majority of type 2 diabetes. And this is one of the reasons why I say muscle is kind of like a glucose sink, and why carrying a little bit of muscle on your frame is always, always a good thing. Because 80% of the glucose we eat, all the sugar we eat, all the carbs we eat, goes to our muscles. So if you don't carry any extra muscle on you, that just means your blood sugar is going to be elevated for longer, and eventually those sugars are going to cause damage and be turned into fat. So if you can lift weights, lift weights. You can eat a high-protein diet, eat a high-protein diet, because the more muscle you have, the better. Here's a list of mechanisms in which statins can lead to diabetes. So the first one is dysregulation of cellular cholesterol. That's because obviously statins block our body's ability to produce cholesterol. And that leads to impaired insulin secretion caused by disruptive voltage-gated calcium channel function in the beta cells of the pancreas, resulting in fusion of insulin granules with the cell membranes. And I do have all these papers linked on the website, so it's kind of complicated, I get it, but everything I'm saying is cited, so please go check out the website if you want. The second way is disruption of mitochondrial function in the myocyte, which is the muscle cell, and the fat cell, adipocyte, and the pancreatic beta cell, resulting in diminished insulin secretion and increased peripheral insulin resistance. And this is extremely important, since mitochondrial dysfunction in skeletal muscle and fat tissue is the genesis of diabetes. For example, in the pancreatic beta cell, which is, you know, the cell that produces insulin, mitochondria are crucial in coupling glucose metabolism to insulin release. And their dysfunction ultimately leads to apoptosis, or cell suicide, and death of the pancreatic beta cell. So when something messes with the mitochondria, it's all bad. And that's what statins do. Another mechanism is they decrease the expression of adipocyte insulin-responsive glucose transporters, so GLUT4. We talked about all the GLUT transporters in the diabetes podcast, so you can listen to that if you want. And that leads to increased peripheral insulin resistance, which is all bad. GLUT4 is distributed within the cell compartment in the basal state and relocates to the cell membrane in response to insulin signaling. GLUT4 expression in skeletal muscle decreases with age, which is another reason why the elderly might be more susceptible to the side effects of statin therapy. And you can think of, I talk about GLUT4, I'm pretty sure there's, there's either 6 or 7 GLUT transporters, I forget, but these are the kind of receptors, the channels our body uses to get glucose out of the blood and into our cells. And they work across a gradient. So GLUT1 works at a real low blood sugar. GLUT6 works at a higher blood sugar. And only a couple of them are actually insulin sensitive. So GLUT4, in response to insulin, so an insulin release, it gets expressed on the outside of the cell at a greater rate, therefore pulls in more sugar. So that's one of the mechanisms how insulin will lower blood sugar, is increases GLUT4 expression. So that's what that is. Another kind of area, something called cavioli. And these are a form of specialized lipid rafts, which form tubes in the cell membrane and are involved in cellular signal transduction and transport, and are particularly prominent in adipocytes, or fat cells. Cell culture studies have demonstrated that cholesterol depletion, which would happen if you take a statin, in fat cells results in a collapse of the cavioli, leading to GLUT4 and insulin receptor degradation. all bad. And that's what happens when you take a statin in these cells. Skeletal muscle insulin resistance is thought to be the primary defect in diabetes, and even in moderate doses, statin therapy in real-life clinical practice is commonly associated with various muscular side effects that are not always evident in randomized clinical trials. And you wonder why this is. And that's because the pharmaceutical industry has tweaked what they define as muscle damage, and I have that in quotes. The most common side effect of statins is muscle pain caused by muscle wasting, yet they cover this up. And this is a quote talking about this. So, quote, as one of the more well-known side effects of statins, muscle breakdown and associated pain or myopathy has also been obscured in the literature. Despite an incidence of up to 40% in the first months of treatment, researchers only cataloged patients who had muscular symptoms in addition to elevations in a blood measure called creatine kinase at 10 times normal for two measurements, not 9.9, not 8, and not only one measurement. End quote. So that just shows you how if you take this drug and your levels are elevated, creatine kinase 9.9, that's almost 10 times for 20 measurements, it will not get measured or not get marked down as muscle pain or muscle myopathy because it doesn't fit their criteria. Because they tweak their criteria to make that number appear as small as possible.
Shady.
So shady. And so this muscle breakdown, which happens with people who take statins, remember it's 40% of people experience muscle pain on statins. 40%. And that pain, like, oh, what's this pain from? That's your muscle literally breaking down. And that's never a good thing. Like, that's obviously bad. So the induction of muscle fatigue and reduced energy, culminating in a diminished exercise potential and decreased activity. So that's another mechanism of how statins can induce diabetes. If you're tired, if your body already hurts, what are you going to want to go do? Not work out. You know what I mean? You're going to lay in bed, right?
Yeah, I mean, that just sounds like it's a positive feedback loop for something negative.
Yeah, exactly. And this causes sarcopenia, which is just skeletal muscle wasting. And that also increases insulin resistance because, once again, our muscles are the biggest site of glucose metabolism. So the purpose, just to wrap it all up, of preventative medicine is to avert or delay the onset of disease. Importantly, the benefits accrued from the preventative treatment should outweigh any risk in both the short and long term. The classic complications of diabetes, which include cardiovascular disease, blindness, kidney failure, and lower limb amputations. So how the hell can doctors prescribe statins when they cause all of these side effects? A 1% decrease in your odds of having a heart attack, but a 30% increase in your odds of developing diabetes, it's just not worth it.
No, not at all. Definitely not worth it.
And that science is ironclad.
Go ahead.
No, I'm just saying that science is ironclad. It is proven that statins cause diabetes.
So I just kind of wanted to summarize what you were saying. So, like, what's supposed to happen at the muscle cell when insulin is present? Is the muscle cell supposed to start taking in glucose? That's what insulin is supposed to do. So if your muscle cells get smaller, then you're not going to be able to take in as much glucose. Or if there's too much insulin, or if your muscle cells aren't responding to the insulin, if they become insulin resistant, they won't take in as much glucose. So either way, the insulin's not working anymore, and that's caused by statin drugs. So what insulin is supposed to do to the fat cells is the fat cells, once they see insulin, they're supposed to stop creating fat because they have another energy source available in your bloodstream that's supposed to be glucose. So that elevated insulin signals to the fat cells to stop producing fat. Well, when fat cells become insulin resistant, they don't get that signal. So they just keep producing more and more fat. That's why people with diabetes generally have elevated triglycerides. And another thing that fat cells do when insulin is present is they store more fat. So that's why a lot of people with diabetes do store a lot of body fat. So that's the way it damages your fat cells. So it damages your muscle cells and it damages your fat cells. That's kind of why, like, these statin drugs are just horrible. It gets rid of your glucose sink, like Tyson said earlier, and it just damages your fat cells. So they just keep creating more and more fat, leading to you getting skinnier and fatter. Nobody wants that skinny fat look. And unfortunately, that's what's going to happen with you if you become insulin resistant And that's why, like, I mean, if you just look around at most Americans, that's the look that they have going on. That's that insulin resistance, which is made so much worse by these statin drugs.
Oh, yeah. No, I mean, not that I'm, like, super judgy, but I guess I am. But if you see a guy walking around with real skinny arms and, like, a 44-inch waist, like, you are diabetic. I don't care if you've been diagnosed or not. You are so insulin resistant, it's not even funny.
Yeah, I mean, and unfortunately, it's like, I don't want to say I am kind of judgmental, like, where I can point out what's wrong. But it's like, I don't blame the person. It's like, I don't think this person is fat and lazy. I'm just like, damn, you've had the worst advice. I could give you a 5-minute speech that would change your life and change all your health outcomes if you just knew what to do.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, I mean, I don't want to judge the person. Just the advice they've been given is just completely wrong. But yeah, so that's the statins for diabetes. Statins 100% cause diabetes at a killer rate, like super, super high, especially for women. And it's just not worth it. There's literally no reason to take a statin. There's so many other things you can do to honestly save yourself from having a heart attack. There's so many other things you can do to be healthy, and statins are not one of them. Poisoning yourself to be healthy makes no sense. So next week we'll talk about heart disease and literally why statins do the exact opposite of what they're claimed to do. But yeah, you have anything else to say, Tom, or you think that was good?
Yeah, I think that's good for now. Yeah, just please share this information on with your friends and family. I mean, this drug is unfortunately prescribed to damn near everybody. At the beginning of the podcast, we talked about two people that are, like, super healthy, like the 1% of the 1% when it comes to physical health. And both of these people would be, like, told by damn near every single cardiologist that they should be on a statin drug, which would definitely not make them healthier.
Yep. And it's just, man, the system's broken. The system's backwards. So like we said before, you have to educate yourself and do it for, if you can't do it just for you, do it for your family. You know, that's what I always consider. This isn't just for me. This is for all the people in my close circle. Nobody in my close circle will ever take a statin because I am that guy. I'll come to your house and I'll pour the pills in the garbage. I'll tear up your prescription. You'll never know your prescription number. You'll never refill it. And if you do, I'll come back and I'll throw them in the garbage again. I don't care. You know, because it's just, that's how bad they are. And I think you should do the same thing, in my opinion, even though it might ruin some relationships, but hey, it's worth it. Okay. Sometimes you got to be the bad cop. But yeah, so that's the podcast. Hope you guys enjoyed. Hope you learned something. Again, you can find all the links to all these studies I referenced on the website. So TNTwellnessandnutrition.com. So go check it out. We're on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. So feel free to reach out anytime.
Yeah. Please rate and subscribe on whatever podcast provider you're listening to us on. I mean, it's great feedback. That's how more people can come and find us. You can find us basically anywhere podcasts are found: Apple Podcasts, Google Play, SoundCloud, Stitcher, and YouTube. Hope everybody has a happy and healthy week.